The Donald Jeffries Show.
And welcome to the Donald Jeffries Show. This is Donald Jeffries. My guest today is a return guest, very popular guest. Steve Eubany is the author of the Who Murdered book series. We've covered in previous shows Who Murdered Diana and Who Murdered Elvis. And tonight we're going to discuss his book on Who Murdered FDR. So, Steve, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. People seem to love you when you're on here. So, I'm interested to hear this. I mean, I suspect, I know when FDR died, like an astounding number of notable people. I mean, let's start with Warren G. Harding, Calvin Coolidge, the two presidents who died before them, who both died rather suddenly, no autopsies done. Senator Joe McCarthy, many, many others that died, you know, suddenly in very questionable circumstances, no autopsy. So, FDR dying like under the circumstances he did is certainly questionable. But in my book, he was one of the all-time conspirators. So I'm anxious to hear why somebody knocked him off at the time they did. So get into, you know, how, first of all, how you got interested in FDR in this series. And just tell the story of how you came to the conclusions you did in the book.
Well, being the kind of person that I am, you know, I like to, my mind is kind of, I call it a monkey mind. You know, if you ever see a monkey play with a ball, that's what my mind does with subjects. So I'm poking and prodding and twisting this thing around. And I never thought that it was a little too convenient for me that FDR, Hitler, and Mussolini all died within 18 days of each other. And I thought it was even more convenient that FDR died mysteriously as Allied troops were storming Hitler's bunker. And I thought this was a little too convenient. So, you know, these are not, I look into all kinds of types of different history. And when I saw this, I said, oh, wait a minute. Oh, something's wrong here. And, you know, when you dig in and dig in and dig in, it's like peeling an onion. There's layers and more layers and more layers. And it's like, man, how deep is this going to go? You know? So I dug into it, and every now and then you get lucky. And I uncovered a diary of one of his favorite cousins that she published called Closest Companion. Her name was Daisy Suckley. And in one of the entries in her diary, she claimed that she was asking his doctor, you know, why he's behaving this way and in such bizarre health. And the doctor came out and said it's some type of poisoning and we can't ascribe anything to it. So,
I've written a lot about this, and I didn't realize that that Hitler, Mussolini, well, you know, I don't think Hitler died. I went to Argentina or whatever, but Hitler, Mussolini, and FDR within 18 days of each other. I did not realize that. It's amazing.
It struck me as a little odd. I just said, okay, wait a minute. You can't make this up. I've got to dig into this, you know. So it's going to be an interesting interview. So don't bother changing the channel, everybody. We're on all the other ones, too. So pop your corn and let's get ready to rock and roll. It's going to be a hell of an interview.
Right. Well, I mean, let's look. So at this point, FDR, although he wasn't that old, early 60s, I guess, was 63, something like that. Well, how was he? Something like that. He was not a real, right, yeah. Well, I guess by the standards of the day. But certainly looked, I mean, if you look at the pictures of him at Yalta, when he basically, you know, gave away Eastern Europe, he looked really, really awful. I mean, he had almost a Joe Biden look about him or whatever. So, I mean, do you think that was, did he have an undetected illness? Was he just aging super rapidly? Or do you think maybe he was being poisoned slowly? Because, of course, they did no autopsy, right? So they don't really know what killed him, right?
69 hours, death to grave, no autopsy. They couldn't get this guy in the ground fast enough. And just like Elvis Presley, they're both buried on federally protected ground and under concrete. How very interesting. Something to make you go, hmm. But yeah. As far as him, he did die of a cerebral hemorrhage. They told the truth about that. How it happened, they didn't touch. And all of a sudden, in this guy's circle, everyone's dying of cerebral hemorrhages. On the way back from Yalta, Major General Paul Watson, right on the ship, died of a cerebral hemorrhage. While he was at Yalta, Harry Hopkins was with him, and he was at a steak and potato dinner. And FDR turned pale, started to sweat, started to vomit. They had to get him out of there. They were all being poisoned. His secretary, his last name is McIntyre, and his first name is escaping me. He died of a cerebral hemorrhage. So you have to ask yourself, you know, what is going on in this garden club of the upper echelon of the United States government where all of this is going on?
Wow. I did not know that. He had the extraneous deaths. Wow. That's something.
Yeah. There's an awful lot going on behind the scenes, but of course at the time that something like this happens, you know, I mean, these landmark deaths, you know, Elvis or, you know, JFK or something, everyone is scrambling around trying to find information because of the shock factor. And of course it's all hidden, but as decades roll past, little things are released through deathbed confessions and published diaries in this case. And you can go back when no one's looking. I'm looking. It's just the guy that I am. So I can go back in and I can say, hey, wait a minute. This is why this happened and this is why that happened. And by the time, you know, I mean, we're FDR is quite a while ago. You know, nobody cares anymore after 80 years or whatever. Most people don't care. Only history people like me would care. So it's out there. It's just that, you know, I'm the only one looking, I guess. And the love affair with FDR was incredible. He had, I have mixed feelings on FDR. I admire him for his perseverance over his disability. I think that anybody who is able to conquer a disability like that deserves a great round of applause. He was never able to gain use of his legs, and what he would do, he was able to gain use of his arms, but he was completely paralyzed at one point. And through hard work, he was able to gain use of his arms. And he used to go, if you've ever been to the Roosevelt Mansion, and I basically lived there for a week while I was studying this at the National Archives, from his front road is quite a stretch. This guy would go, quote unquote, walking every day. Walking to him was dragging his legs behind him, trying to get the use of his legs back. And of course it never worked, but I mean, the courageous aspect of this person, my admiration for him is off the charts. He was a little too liberal for me. I think he was an excellent war president. So I have mixed feelings about him. So being a good investigator of history, and I'm a history detective. I don't really classify myself as a conspiracy theorist, although I do run across them, and I know them when I see them. I dig into history where everybody stops digging. So you know, when I dug into this, I started to realize that he had a fawning media, loved everything that he did. He took advantage of the communication venue of the day, which was radio. And back in that day, radio was a piece of furniture in the middle of your living room or your den. It was a gigantic piece of thing, you know. It looked like it was a wooden piece of furniture, you know. So he could take his message directly to the people. So people felt very connected to him. Same thing, and I'm good that people are going to go crazy when I say this. Trump did the same thing with Twitter. Just directly to the people.
Right, right.
Okay. Just taking advantage of the communication method of the day. All right. So he had a fawning media who covered a lot of his indiscretions. He had multiple girlfriends in the White House. They didn't show his disability on camera, or in pictures. They didn't show his leg braces. So it was really hard for me to wrap my arms around the fact that, quite a few people hated FDR. And when I started to look into the suspects, the list of suspects was far longer than I had ever thought that wanted this guy out of the White House. And You know, he was just elected on February 15th, 1933, in an assassination attempt from Giuseppe Zangara. Right. You know, they tried to shoot him. Guy missed.
Yeah.
Being the mayor of Chicago. But, I mean, that'd tell you right there. Not everybody's right. fawning over this guy.
Well, he had lots of enemies. But, I mean, why do you think it, because he, you know, obviously he was in office for 12 plus years because he had just been elected to a fourth term, unprecedented. Why do you think, because the people who opposed him, whatever they opposed him for, it's likely he already did. So I'm just wondering, you know, at that point, he seems like a decrepit old man. The war is about to end. I guess even at that point, it looked like it. He had already passed all his alphabet agencies. I'm wondering what would have been the motivation at that point? Do you think, could it have been more of an inside job where the people just thought maybe he was losing his faculties and they wanted someone in there they could control a little easier?
All of the above. Is there a checkbox for all the above? Whoever was in on this, and I'm not going to tell you who it is, you'll have to read the book, had their eye on the post-war world and how the world was going to align. They knew that FDR was very shrewd. They didn't know much about his successor, didn't put any faith in him being any sort of cranial titan, I'll put it to you that way. They just thought they could roll right over his second in command. So they underestimated Truman a great deal, and they probably shouldn't have. So that was the first part of it. The second part of it is the reason why he was a decrepit old man was not due to the advance of polio. It was due to the advance of poisoning. He was being slowly poisoned from inside the White House. And he was being poisoned with something that at that time we didn't know was poison. And I mean, Europe is, you know, quite older than we are. And there's a lot of medical knowledge that they had at the time that we didn't have. We're a young country at that point. So this had been already deemed a poison in the European bloc, and it was actually outlawed in 1922 over there. But it was a very common thing here. So there are people in the White House who are not necessarily fond of him.
What poison are you referring to? By the chance.
I'm not going to tell you. You have to read the book.
You're going to make
it. Man, I sent you the book.
That's right. Well, for the audience, they don't all sure have it.
Man, I sure Ocelli probably devoured this thing. But,
oh, yeah, of course he does. Right on. Yeah.
He's one of the finest researchers I know. He loves to dig. But I'll run you down the list of suspects. Okay. And with all of my books, this is how my books work.
Well, you were trying to say Eleanor. Was she like Mrs. Harding? You know, Mrs. Harding is one of the chief suspects with Warren Harding.
Well, you know, Eleanor was also his wife and his cousin.
Mm-hmm.
Born a Roosevelt, married a Roosevelt, died a Roosevelt. Never changed her monogram her entire life, which was had its perks. And she knew very well that FDR was carrying on extramarital affairs with people within the White House. Don't go any further, you've got motive.
Mm-hmm.
So with all of my books, what I do is I make a pool of people who could be pissed at these people, and I run them through the elements of a crime, motive, means, and opportunity. And I let the evidence run the show. Okay, I don't write the evidence. The evidence really writes the book. It's kind of like a sculptor who just whittles away the pieces so the sculpture can be seen. I just whittle away the fluff so the evidence can look you right in the face. And whoever comes through motive, means, and opportunity is the one you're after. So in this book, these are the suspects. Okay, I already talked about Eleanor being a suspect. The girlfriends. Okay, he had numerous girlfriends in and around the White House. Pardon me. They also knew what was going on with Eleanor. Eleanor knew what was going on with them. Okay. One of them was at the little White House in Warm Springs, Georgia, when the guy died. Was she accounted for? Very interesting. So that's a suspect. The Russians. Did the Russians want him out of the way? You know, good old Uncle Joe. He was a temporary ally, and everybody knew it. nobody really trusted Stalin. And they had good reasons, too. Stalin was probably the greatest megalomaniac in history. Look through the Great Purges. I mean, he had both of his wives murdered. You know, he had his eye on the post-war universe. He wanted the land grab to spread communism. Did he want him out of the way? Nazis and Nazi spies. A few of them were caught and, you know, a few of them were put to death. The Duquesne spy ring had 33 members. It was the largest spy network in American history. It was a Nazi spy ring. Their mission was to sabotage and assassinate anybody they could. They got caught. Another one was Operation Pastorius, 8 members. Again, Nazi spy ring. And their job was to attack civilian targets and heads of state. They got caught. They got the electric chair. So we're dealing with some pretty heavy-duty things here. This is the other side of history that no one wants to talk about, but I will. The rich people in America who hated this guy. You know, if you had money in the stock market or if you were a head of industry, like DuPont or Henry Ford or the Mellon family or, you know, any one of them, the Frick family, Samuel Colgate, Harvey Firestone, all of these people had empires that they were trying to run. And, of course, this guy's taxing them 200%, and he's really damping down their efforts to maintain their little empires. There's threats coming right there in high power in the United States. So all of these people are suspects in the book, and I screen them all for motive, means, and opportunity. And in the end, I'll tell you who did it, how they did it, why they did it, the whole shot. Now, people will say, Steve, look, this is outlandish. He was just a frail old man who died the advance of polio or paralysis or whatever he had. Not true. All right. Here's why. The symptoms he had. If you look between the two conferences ending in Yalta, all right, if you look between the Sharon Conference in 1943 and the Yalta Conference in 1945, this guy's health had taken a turn for the worse.
Yeah.
All right. This guy was all but a corpse. Yes. Walking. Well, not walking because he couldn't walk. You know, poor choice of words on my part. But you understand where I'm going with this. So his doctor, Admiral Ross McIntyre, you know, he was Assistant Secretary of the Navy, FDR, so he was a Navy man, all right? So he entrusted his health, naturally, to the Navy, right? So Admiral Ross McIntyre is Vice Admiral and Surgeon General of the Navy, went on to write the book 1946, The White House Physician. He was the one who was FDR's doctor. And they couldn't figure out why this guy, his after meal times specifically, his blood pressure would go crazy. You know, 310 over 190, and they'd give him drugs and, you know, to control it, and his body wasn't responding to these drugs. So they called in Dr. Howard Bruin, who was another one. He held high rank. He was a lieutenant commander in the Navy. He was a cardiologist. And, you know, the two of them, they knew each other well, Dr. McIntyre and Dr. Bruin. And they said, you know, we have no idea what's going on. His body is not responding to this medicine. So they're stumped. They're absolutely stumped. So they take him in 1944, in March of 1944, to the doctor of the day, Dr. Leahy. Dr. Frank Leahy, who went on later to form the Leahy Clinic in Boston, which is still in existence. So he examines him, and they basically told him, first thing they do is run x-rays, which I can't imagine why you would run x-rays on anybody who has high blood pressure. I don't know if that made any sense, but they're searching, trying to find something. So he does his barrage of tests, and I notice now it's been pulled off the web, probably because I'm talking about it. But it was on the History Channel, history.com, the History Channel's website. It showed the dossier of what the doctor said was wrong with him. It's in my book. You can get my book, and you can check that out. And this is what they said. Okay. Dr. Leahy said he had cardiovascular changes. He had intellectual and mental changes. He had sensory motor issues. He had gastrointestinal issues. He had issues with his nervous system. These are all broken down in the book. I'm giving you the summary. He had skeletal problems. He was turning gray. He had bone marrow alterations. He had problems. He had renal damage with his kidneys. This is not the advance of polio. The advance of polio is, look it up, everybody will, the advance of polio is muscle and joint weakness, muscle pain, becoming exhausted or fatigued, atrophy, trouble breathing, and becoming cold. This is not the advance of polio, folks. The guy's being poisoned, and he's being poisoned from people that he knows inside the White House. And it's odd because every time he goes to the little White House in Georgia, in Warm Springs, Georgia, he starts to be rejuvenated again. He starts to come back to life. Everybody's, well, how fantastic this is. Why? He's eating different food. He's got a different cook. He goes back to the White House. Golly, Bob Howdy, he's sick again. And they can't figure it out. So Warm Spring, Georgia comes. And, of course, you know, the inevitable happens. FDR dies in the presence of two foreign spies. And no one writes about it. He dies in the presence of someone who's doing his portrait, painting his portrait, and her photographer. And the people I'm talking about, the Russian painter, Elizabeth Shumatov, is painting his portrait. And she has a book out, and she says in her book, this is not me talking, okay, it's not this way because I say it's that way. She wrote it, all right? She said that she was over here with her husband, Leo, on a mission for the provincial government. She was an Abanov. Her family held high regard. They were in high military status and high regard in Russia. So they come over, and they're bouncing around New York State. He ends up going to work as a business manager for the Sigorsky Aviation Corporation. Gee, how are these Russians all finding each other in an enemy country? Isn't that strange?
Mm-hmm.
So this is happening, dies in front of these people. How very convenient, right? Her photographer, because she does paint at night, take the picture and paint at night, film things in. And she's a fabulous painter. Go look her stuff up. She's incredibly gifted, or was. Her photographer was a man named Nicholas Robbins. And she used to take pictures. You know, they worked together. Secret Service could not have possibly cleared these people. This is the biggest war the world has ever seen, right? And I hope we never see anything that parallels it ever again.
Mm-hmm.
I looked into Nicholas Robbins, and it was a real interesting rabbit hole on the way down. He went from his nationalization papers say his name is Nicholas Kubikinski. Somehow he went from Nicholas Kubikinski to Nicholas Cobbins, and then he went from Nicholas Cobbins to Nicholas Robbins. Who the hell is this guy who was alone with our president in the middle of the greatest war we've ever seen? Mm-hmm. You can't make this up. It's insane. It's absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you're hatching over there. I know you've got questions, Don. Lay them on me.
Well, I mean, he was in the presence of a photographer and painter at the time of his death, but no one else was there. Like he had no aides around him, no security, nothing like that. So all I've heard, you know, from the conventional history is that he said, "I have a terrific headache," or supposedly his last words. I think that's the court historians tell us. But was there no one to come rushing in? Because you're saying he died in their presence, so they realized he was dead. That's all there was to it. Like he was already dead by the time anybody else got there.
Well, he was quote unquote doing his laundry, which means he had his paperwork sprawled all out over the desk in the chairs, and he was doing his correspondences, and they were painting him while he was doing it. So there were other people there. His personal groomer, Arthur Prettyman, who was chief petty officer, he was there. A couple of other people were there. They were not in the room. They were not immediately there. They were on site. Not necessarily where he was.
Well, I'd say it was strange, obviously, but it wasn't unprecedented. Like I said, when Harding died under equally dubious circumstance, he was much younger. He's on a cruise, and he just died. And his wife said no autopsy, so they still don't really know what killed him. Calvin Coolidge, later that decade after he's out of office, drops dead of a heart attack. It was fine, a few hours before, no autopsy. So FDR dying like this, there was a precedent set, but it just seems to me that somebody at the time, this is a stupid question, because back in those days, there seemed to be no controversy about anything, but did anyone question like the circumstances of his, first of all, did anybody question the one, because you look at those pictures, now I don't know what the evolution of his looks were, but he seemed to go from the FDR look we kind of know, the urbane, look with the cigarette holder and everything, to just kind of an elitist look, to this gray, ashen, suddenly white-haired, and somebody that looked like he got terminal cancer overnight, or so he looked awful at Yalta. Was there an evolution, or was it that abrupt? And did anybody in the press question looks? And how much speculation in the press? Certainly, people like the Chicago Tribune, maybe, run Westbrook Peglers, people like that. Nobody questioned at the time the circumstances here?
No, to my knowledge, no. They had a very cooperative media, and whatever they wanted, whatever the White House wanted printed was printed. And, to my knowledge, no. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm just saying that I couldn't find any evidence of it going on. So there was an awful lot. There was a lot going on. I mean, they were trying to knock each other off at an alarming rate. Hitler had 40, at least that I could count, 42 attempts on his life from 1933 to 1944. Mm-hmm. Erwin Rommel, the Desert Fox, had a coup going against Hitler. And they found him, and they hauled him out of his house and forced him to take a cyanide capsule. They were after each other hard. It's not that far-fetched when you look at the history of poisonings and things that are going on. My all-time favorite, Hitler planned Operation Long Jump to assassinate Churchill, FDR, and Stalin during the Tehran conference. And you know what? Stalin's people caught that. We didn't even catch it. If Stalin's people weren't involved, they would have succeeded. They came really close. But my favorite, when you talk about these poisonings.
Your favorite poisoning, okay.
My favorite poisoning attempt of all time should be right in Maxwell Smart, and it was one of my distant cousins, Winston Churchill. Yes, folks, I'm a distant cousin of Winston Churchill, but I won't sign your autograph. But the Nazis were very, very smart. You can say a lot of things about the Nazis, but you can't say they were dumb. These people were extremely good at whatever they did. These German people they're very, very, very smart. So they did their intel on Churchill, and they realized that he liked his cigars and he liked dark chocolate. So what they it just cracks me up that somebody did this, how smart this was. So what the Nazis did is they made a bomb and dressed it up like a chocolate bar. And it was called Peter's Chocolate, and it was fancy with the gold trim and this and that, and they put it on the tray, and it almost worked. It was supposed to make its way into Churchill, who was going to unwrap it, and it was going to blow his head off. And it almost worked. So, as outlandish as that is, it's so crazy that it almost worked, So these people were really, really after each other. And somebody else wrote a book out there about him having cancer. Something over his eyebrow, there was a mole or whatever that
changed.
Yeah,
I've heard that. Well, that's the look he had, that he just really looked like he was emaciated and just a really huge change in a short period of time. As far as I know, maybe I missed some photographs along the way.
No, no, he was steadily going downhill, and I don't know how he lived as long as he did. I mean, it's to his credit, he was one tough dude. I'm just astonished that he lived as long as he lived. But this cancer thing, you know, I think everybody has had someone or knows someone who has, you know, died of cancer. Unfortunately, typically what happens, and I'm no doctor, but this is what I've seen, you know, they get progressively worse and they have good days and bad days and eventually they just perish. They don't go on this bipolar health schism from vibrant health to death's door to vibrant health, especially after mealtimes. And that's what was so baffling with this. This is that doctors were absolutely stumped. So I lay it out in the book very well. And I do it in a way where everyone can follow along. The poisonings for opposition leaders is incredible when you really look at it. If you go all the way back to a legitimate weapon of poisoning, goes all the way back to 331 BC. Everyone from Rasputin to the Apostle John, they tried to poison. Rasputin, they did everything to him. I think the only thing that could have killed him was my mother's meatloaf. But I can say that now. It's not Mother's Day anymore. You all the way back to the Italian Renaissance. You know, I mean, they all had food testers, and every president since the 1700s has had food testers. You know, name one. You know, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush Jr. They all have them. Mm-hmm. So what? It's such a problem now that Cleopatra. You know, I mean, Henry VIII, Lincoln, I mean, Napoleon, the Roman Emperor Claudius, and on. It's such a problem now that the White House has set up a presidential food safety team, and they are charged with the incredible responsibility of warding this off. They oversee the president's food being made. They make sure everything is safe. Even the air in the White House is filtered. Even the air that's filtered that goes in there. So don't send cupcakes to the president. He's not getting them. Save your frosting. Okay. So they have an entire security zone set up for the first family to eat without the fear of complications or poisoning. Why do they have that? Because it's for real. The latest poisoning that I was made aware of was in 1993, and it was Turkey's 8th president was poisoned with a glass of lemonade at the Bulgarian embassy. I mean, this is for real. You know, it's not something out of Maxwell Smart. So when these people, our presidents and their dignitaries, go outside of the food safety zone, when they travel, when they have to go to another country, they use food tasters. You know, they use everything from dogs to monkeys to Hitler used to use convicts. I mean, in fact, there was one woman, I think she just died here last year or the year before. I saw an article on her where she was one of Hitler's food testers. She used to test his food for him. It's bone chilling to think that how badly these people want to do away with, you know, with people in that capacity. It's really something.
Well, yeah, it's part of our, like you said, it goes back for a very long time. But I'm wondering, as far as, so you don't, you know, because, you know, I'm a big conspiracy guy, obviously. So, you know, I mean, I know, you know, like I said, in my book, Roosevelt was one of the all-time great conspirators. And I, you know, looks like they knocked him off. J. Edgar Hoover, a lot of people think they knocked him off years later, you know, again.
I don't have any doubt in my mind that Hoover was murdered.
Yeah, I think
there's no doubt, none. I won't write that book, but
yeah.
I have no doubt. Warren Harding, there's not one shred of morsel in my body that doesn't believe that Warren Harding was murdered. There's been a lot of people murdered in high office. The difference is we're just better at cartoons than some other countries, you know.
Yeah.
We can spin it, you know.
Well, yes, and in the case of some of these, you know, the way the system responds to these deaths, and they seem to respond this way all the time, where these questions, obviously, about JFK's autopsy, was, as Harold Weisberg said, wasn't fit for a Bowery bum. and that seems to be the case all too often. You can even look into, and that's why I never run out of things to write it. Look at this guy, Bob Saget, a Full House guy. I mean, clearly they're lying about, I mean, I don't know why, but clearly he didn't, you know, apparently his head was so fractured. It was like he was hit in the head with a baseball bat several times, and they're going to have you believe he hit his head accidentally and then went to sleep. I mean, absurd. But so they seem to lie constantly about these deaths of high profile people, even someone like that. It's unrelated to politics. So it doesn't, you know, I mean, something like Joe McCarthy. Joe McCarthy went into Bethesda Naval Hospital with a knee problem, 49 years old. He dies 2 days later. No autopsy.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Finally, you know, what happened was, and this was a clincher for me. All right. So I'm digging and digging, and it took, I mean, this didn't take as long. Elvis was 10 years. I mean, that was, I mean, not every day, but this one didn't take that long. This took, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years to dig into. And I do all the work myself, which is why you can certainly understand that after 12 years of doing book after book, I'm getting ready to go walk in the green grass for a while.
But right.
what really hammered it home for me was in 1957, Eleanor Roosevelt, after reading Ross McIntyre's book, The White House Physician, and hearing all of the rumors around Washington that her husband was murdered, she finally had had enough, and she hired a private investigator. And said, just like Elvis Presley's father, you can't make this up.
Wow.
Vernon Presley hired a private investigator to investigate Elvis's death because he knew he was murdered.
Right.
And guess what? My book finishes that probe. In this case, the private investigator for Eleanor Roosevelt, this is 12 years later. He died.
Yeah.
This is 57. Okay.
Yes.
Finally, this private investigator starts to dig, and he's looking around Bethesda, and he's snooping all over, and he's asking really high profile and important questions. And someone finally had to get a hold of Eleanor and said, FDR's medical records are gone. They've been stolen out of a locked file. Four people had those keys. Four people. And I'll tell you in the book who they are. But I'm not going to give this away. I can't, you know. But
of course. Yeah, you can read through the details.
I could sit here and I could tell everybody, well, this one did it this how, you know.
Of course.
Colonel Mustard did it with a broken glass in the den. You know, I could tell them. I really want people to know the history. Because it's important, because if we don't learn from our history, we're in trouble as a people, as a nation, as a world. We have to learn from our history. So when no one's looking, I'm looking, and I'm deranged enough where I come around and present this to people just to tweak them on the nose and say, hey, remember this? You know?
Absolutely. Well, I just wanted to read you a couple comments in the chat room. Chris says, FDR found the insipid small talk at the White House social functions rather tedious and would often amuse himself by greeting guests by remarking, I murdered my grandmother this morning. Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, every now and then I screw with a waitress really bad. You know, if I'm with a friend.
Not to that extent, probably, right?
And I'm at, well, actually, probably. So, you know, if, like, I just did this, you know, like a week ago. I was at Denny's with a friend of mine, and I knew the waitress was coming over. So I said, well, anyway, we had to kill him, and the cops are still trying to find the body. So this waitress comes up, and this is what she hears, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, playing with humanity. Anyway, no, I'd never heard that, but that was it's funny. I never heard that one.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. But there's you talk about that kind of thing. A similar thing, I wrote about it in On Borrowed Fame. You know, Burt Reynolds was involved, was at the scene of a death of I think it was Sarah Miles. He was doing a movie with her, The Man Who Loved Cat Dancing, a 70s movie, and her boyfriend died very suspiciously. Clearly was murdered. I don't think there's any question about it. And Burt Reynolds was, you know, right there at the scene at his last minutes. And so John Ritter, supposedly, who later died ahead of his time himself, but he was rumored to be famous for going into restaurants and suddenly banging the table and standing up and saying, and that, kids, is how Burt Reynolds got away with murder. So I think that's a great little anecdote. I mean, I assume it's true. But
how could you make that up?
Exactly. So Eleanor Roosevelt hires a private eye 12 years. I wonder why she waited 12 years. Do you think she had doubts herself? And I wonder just why it took so long. It seems like the trail would be cold by then.
That's a question that only history knows, and that's been lost to history. I really don't know. I don't know why it happened. I just know that it happened. Weird. Here's another parallel in history. And in the back of the Diana book that I just wrote, I do these things called threads of insanity, where all of these high-profile murders have sanitized death scenes and red herrings planted so you can be spun off. And they all have just planted evidence, like I said, sanitized death scenes, all kinds of crazy things. So here's another parallel, kind of an eerie parallel from FDR to JFK. Okay, and I don't know why these Democrats, they love to play this initial thing, FDR, JFK, AOC. I don't know, it must be marketing. I don't know.
Exactly.
But I mean, it's great marketing. I don't know why they do it, but
the body
was, he died in Warm Springs, Georgia, and the body was removed from Georgia and the autopsy was done in D.C. in the same way that JFK's body was removed from Dallas. Mm-hmm. Broke the same law.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Because, well, yeah, I was going to say the assassination was not a federal crime in 1963, but the death, yeah, if he died in Warm Springs, Georgia, I guess by law they should have had the medical examiner locally do the autopsy.
That's exactly right.
Well, nobody did the autopsy, I guess. So.
Well, that's true. But I mean, his body was, I guess they, I don't know if they did a full autopsy, but I mean, they certainly looked it over. But his body shouldn't have been removed without, I talked to Dr. Wecht about this, your friend and mine, mm-hmm. and he said that internationally, you can't be moved to another country unless you have an autopsy in the country that you die in. So Princess Diana and Dodi Al-Fayed, of course, they're under different separate set of rules because I don't know if Dodi was ever autopsied in France. These rules are broken all the time. Now, if I'm remembering Dr. Weck's comments correctly, that happens with states, too. Yeah. I don't think you can be moved to a different state without an autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that for spread of disease for all kinds of different reasons. And I'm due to call Cyril about something else too. Actually, let me make a note here.
Okay.
Thanks for reminding me of this. Call Cyril. Okay. I have a question for him about something else. The next book that I'm writing. So
yeah.
There's all kinds of these crazy things going on through history, and it's amazing to me when you start to look at the fact that the first thing I do is x-rays on a guy whose blood pressure is going out of control. What did they expect an x-ray to show?
Yeah, that is pretty weird.
That in itself to me tells me that they didn't know what the hell they were looking for. They were just looking. They were baffled, absolutely baffled. So a couple of things about Eleanor Roosevelt and Harry Hopkins and the New Deal, a couple of things that I dug up that are worth mentioning here.
Mm-hmm.
They were all under investigation for communists, for being communists. And who investigated them? Your friend and mine, Hoover. Mm-hmm. And I just put on my Facebook page the pictures, and I know you saw them. Eleanor Roosevelt's file, the filing cabinet, filled mm-hmm. with the files of, you know, her being, you know, connected to communists, and they were. And here's why. The CPUSA, the Communist Party of the United States of America, was started in 1919 in New York City. It was founded there, and it's still there. And you should check out their website. You'd be astonished at what political side they're promoting. They didn't know anything really about what communists were. Communists to them was just, you know, communism got started in America through the elites in academia, Hollywood, the news media, people in arts and literature. They were invited to the USSR by their people in high command so they could show them. This was after the 20s. The roaring 20s had crashed. So it was an opportune time for the communists to say, hey, we've got this new system of government where everyone's taken care of cradle to grave. You don't have to do anything but exist. We do everything for you. You know, all you have to do is collect daisies and just go skip in the sunlight. So they were invited. They were invited over to, you know, Russia. Well, what today we know is Russia. And they were shown this model village where everything was pristine and kept up perfectly and everyone was happy. And this is called a Potemkin village. It was a cardboard village. And they were only the people who were over there as the Russians' guests had official chaperones, and they could only go where they were, you know, where they were supposed to go. They couldn't stray off and investigate anything. It wasn't allowed. So they were sent back, with packets on how to change capitalist society into a communist society. And those packets, of course, followed the Communist Manifesto almost to the letter. And in, you know, of course, Communist Manifesto was written by Marx and Engels.
Marx and Engels, right?
Yeah, and you know, there were 11 or 12 planks outlined in that. Anyway, this is where they derived this information from, and they gave them packs to not only turn them into, show them how to transform a capitalist society into a communist society, but they also sent them back as almost a civic duty to save the people who were poor and who were suffering. Mm-hmm. So here you have these people who think they're doing the greatest thing in the world, and they're going back to America, and by golly, we're going to do this communist thing because it's the right thing to do. And they're planted all over the news media and Hollywood and arts and entertainment and this and that and the other thing. So naturally, there's a couple quotes in my book about FDR making remarks to communists about communists. They didn't know anything about evil empires. They knew nothing about it. They just knew that, you know, it was a new form of government that seemed to work better than the roaring 20s who just crashed. So naturally, they all had. Harry Hopkins was one of Eleanor Roosevelt's friends. Harry Hopkins was FDR's right-hand man who did the New Deal and the Lend-Lease program. He authored them. And it was hard for FDR to travel. You know, the guy's in a wheelchair and he's got leg braces on. You know, I mean, you really have to feel sorry for this guy. Mm-hmm. So when somebody needed to go fly abroad or fly, you know, to Russia or a specific country, he would have Harry Hopkins do that. So Hopkins was later identified as a KGB, as a spy. He was the Agent 19 who was leaking information to the Russians on just about everything that we had. And he was identified by a KGB defector, Oleg somebody, and there's no way, something G and ski, and it's a whole big long word. I'm not even going to attempt it. But
yeah.
He identified him as Agent 19, who, you know, he was a covert operative in all kinds of things. So
as opposed to Agent 99, I remember her well.
I knew that you might. So when Stalin used to meet with Roosevelt, he knew everything that was going on in America. And, you know, the United States we have spies, too. You know, I mean, you know, we always hear about other people's spies, but we have spies, too. And they're pretty good. We just don't hear about it because, you know what, we have propaganda, too, folks. It's just kind of the way it is. But there's a lot going on. The communists in the United States at that time were into, every system of government, when they got, Harry Hopkins oversaw Whitaker Chambers and Elizabeth Bentley, which had huge Russian spy rings in the United States. So when they got caught, they blew the whistle on everybody in the interior of the United States government at that time. Everyone from Harry Dexter White to Elger Hiss and all points in between. I mean, and they were, I'll give you a little list, not to bore everybody, but like I said, I'm a history nerd. Here we go. They were in, communists at that time were in the Public Welfare Committee, the Treasury Department. Could you imagine this? The Price Administration Board, the War Production Board, Labor Advisory Board, National Labor Relations Board, the Department of State, the Attorney General's Office, And the Agricultural Administration, I'm sorry, the Agricultural Adjustment Administration. All of these branches of our government were all run by communists who were secretly working behind the scenes for Whitaker Chambers and Elizabeth Bentley and for Stalin. It's just incredible when you look at all of the people who are in and around FDR at that time who, you know what, probably weren't all that friendly to him. It should shock no one that this guy was being slowly and systematically poisoned from inside. There was also, I mean, like I said, there were Nazis all around him as well. Very interesting time in history. I hope we never see anything like it again, but you know what? Yeah. I think we're gonna.
I hope so. The chat room, and this is, you know, again, I've heard about lots of people getting knocked off. We've got people commenting here about you need to look into the death of James Brown. There was a controversy about James. I had no idea. Do you know anything about that?
I'm sorry you broke up. Can you repeat that?
Yeah, no. So the people in the chat room are saying you need to look into the death of James Brown. I say, you know, I know of a lot of mysterious deaths. I did not know about that. You know anything about that?
No, I don't. I don't, actually. It's really strange. I was like the first person that was contacted to look into, his name's going to escape me, Jeffrey Epstein. I was the first person that they got hold of. I got to tell you who got a hold of me. Wouldn't do that. But okay. You know him. You know him. You can use your imagination.
Okay.
And say, and they were trying to get me to look into that. And I said, how many no's do you want? My no's have no's. Okay. I'm not even going to go anywhere near that. But I get contacted all the time about people who are interested in having things, you know, investigated, like Warren, and I'm out for hire. You want something looked into, I'll do it. Warren Harding to me is glaring. It's just glaring. And this is why I write these books. You know, people say, oh, you're out there just trying to make a buck. Well, you've written a book. How's that working out for you?
Yeah, exactly. Not making too many bucks.
What you do, you write a book because why I write my book. Okay, the old mystique of authors living on this big hill in a mansion, getting all kinds of royalties. Don't even think about it. It ain't true. Okay. Yes. You better plan on seeing Europe from your television set, folks. The reason why I write these books, and every motivation, every author has a different motivation. The reason why I write these books is because there's so few justice left in this world. There's so little justice. These people have been maligned in history, and I think FDR could read my book. I think he'd like it. Someone has to set the record straight. Same thing with Elvis Presley. I mean, it is so blatantly obvious when you look at the information. The guy was murdered, you know. And same thing with Princess Diana.
Yeah.
All book subjects that I've written about. So I think that if Elvis, FDR, and Diana could read the books that I wrote about, I think they'd all smile. I think they'd high-five me because someone has to cut through the fluff and tell it the way it is. You know, we've been talking all this time. Should we tell people how to get it?
Oh, absolutely. So tell them all, anything you want to promote, and tell them the best way to get your books.
Okay, well, I'm on ebook and audiobook and Kindle all the way around the world. Okay, so if you're in Beijing and you want it, you can get it. Get it that way. It's available on Amazon. If you want a physical book, go to my website. If you want a paperback, I'll even autograph it for you. If you want it made out to Santa Claus, I'll do that too. I don't care. Go to whomurderedbooks.com, whomurderedbooks.com, and you know, send me if you want to. If you got a birthday coming up or a holiday or something, you want to give it as a gift, just tell me who you want it to make it out to, and I'll autograph it. Physical books are going away. Okay, what I have in stock is what I have in stock. I'm not reordering them. I'm having supply issues. Cost is going crazy. I'm getting out of the physical book thing, folks. So if you want them, get them soon. If you want me on your show, there's a contact form on my page, on my site. You can just fill out the little thing. I'd be happy to come on your show if you're looking for somebody to speak. If you have a conference or something, I'd be happy to do it. I like to, and reach out to me. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I like to stay in contact with people who read my work, because if you lose that, if you have that disconnect, it's very hard to know what people like and what they don't like. So reach out to me, friend me, talk to me, contact me. I'm out there. I'm out there, man. The next book I'm doing is on Nikola Tesla.
All right. I would definitely want to talk to you about that. He's fascinating to me. And I don't have any question that, obviously we still don't know where his files are. So something weird about his death, I would suspect. Question for you, is the speaker familiar with the Doolittle Report that outlined how they infiltrated the U.S. government in the late 1940s? They hid it from Truman. Do you know anything about that?
Your mic broke up again. What was the report?
The Doolittle Report.
Oh, yeah. I am. I did not put it in this book, but I am familiar with that. I am familiar with that. That is fascinating. That should be a book all by itself.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that you want to write a book on something, do that one. There you go. You're a book author.
Yeah, well, I'm like you. See, I my mind wanders, so that's why I write these hidden history books I can cover. I mean, yeah, I stay on JFK a long time, 9/11. Those I can cover that a lot. But then my mind wanders, and I got to go all over the place. So I can throw all these little tidbits in, and the readers I have seem to enjoy it that way. So it's but you're much more disciplined, going after one particular subject at a time.
I'll tell you what: when you have 4 college degrees and you've been subject to that minutia, you can stay on one subject pretty well. Yeah. Don't ever do that. Don't ever take that much college, really. Don't do it.
Well, don't worry. About a half-assed community college. I was a community college dropout, so I did.
I wish I was, because it was a misspent time. But I was going to do a JFK book. I was. And I was actually on the phone, well, on Skype, talking to your producer, Chuck, about doing my JFK book, and we were talking about it, and that was in the conversation with him, and I said, you know what, I'm not going to write this book. And it had nothing to do with Chuck at all. I just had the revelation that, you know what, everybody is fighting and arguing. Even if they agree, they argue. If they're a lone gunman person, they're arguing about how many fillings JFK had in his teeth. If you're a conspiracy person on this, you're arguing about, what color socks somebody had on. And I said to myself, you know what? I am not going to be cross-analyzed the rest of my life over something. I just can't put my nose in that trough. I just can't do it. So those people who are writing about that, God bless you. Keep doing it. Because
there's so, everything's been written about it, but, it's from every conceivable angle. And I think, if you studied it, I started when I was a teenager working with Mark Lane as a volunteer with this group, Citizens Committee of Inquiry. And, it took me a couple weeks. I read a couple books and I said, well, okay, I know Oswald didn't do it. And, then I would look for a long time who did, and finally figured, like, it's probably beyond me to figure out who did it. But there's somebody obviously very powerful that did it. But so I get very bored with people that are still arguing about, well, okay, let's start from the premise that they got it wrong, which we know they did, and their investigation was a joke. But I can still approach it from that, and from being like, I've become friendly over the last year with Oswald's daughter, Rachel.
Very nice.
So it's cool, like, meeting people like that. And as Chuck will tell you, we've had Buell Wesley Frazier on the show, the guy who wrote Oswald to Work that morning, is very incredibly nice guy. In fact, the great Bob Wilson on his show Sunday was interviewing, and I was on there helping interview Buell again. And it's great talking to people like that. But as far as, I don't know what kind of information we get at this point. I mean, people who studied it already know. But anyway, so you've given out any more links to give out, anything else to promote? Because we're just about out of time. I know you have to get out of here after an hour. So, I really appreciate you coming on. And anything else you want to say or you'd like to promote before we go?
Be positive and test negative. That's what I want to tell people. So take care of yourselves. Be good. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to everybody who's listening. Thanks to everybody. And I'll catch you on the next one.
Thank you very much, Steve. Okay, so are we at the... We should be at the... There's the music. Okay, thanks a lot, Steve Ubani. And we'll probably be talking again down the road. We'll be right back after these words.
a time of fake news, fake politicians, and fake fiat currency, it's getting harder to find the genuine article. That's why when it comes to precious metals, I call the team I can trust. This is David Knight from my friends at Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange. Proudly veteran-owned and operated, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange is your home for gold and silver coins, bullion, jewelry, and more. Prices and inventory are updated daily, so you get the most competitive possible pricing. And when it's time to sell your gold and silver items, they pay top dollar. Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange also accepts and deals in Bitcoin. Call or text the owner, Tony Arterburn, today at 888-667-1836. That's 888-667-1836. Or just go to wisewolf.gold. From bullion to Bitcoin, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange.
Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange.
Revelation through conversation.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Hi, this is Cindy Sheehan. You're listening to The Donald Jeffrey Show.
When a fan of The Ocelli Effect calls in to The Ocelli Effect.
I just wanted to call in and tell you and Michael Swanson and J.P. Sicily and all of the guests that you have how much I love your show. Always interesting. It's always informative. I just wanted to tell you in person on the phone. I mean, I love you. I love your show. I love everything you do. I will always be there to support you. You know that.
We appreciate you so much. You have okay. No idea.
Thanks. And most of our fans just sent email and death threats.
Shelly.com.
We'll be right back.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination looked into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at kiasjfk@aol.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
Ochelli.com.
Hi there, this is John Barber, and you're listening to the most informed man in America, my friend, fellow author, and raconteur, the great Donald Jeffries Show.
You are listening to the Donald Jeffries Show.
And welcome back to the Donald Jeffries Show. I hope you guys enjoyed Steve Eubany. He's been on, again, a couple times before, so we've covered all three of his books. And cannot wait for Who Murdered Tesla. That would be my favorite one because I'm a huge fan of Nikola Tesla. And for those of you who don't know out there, one little curious historical tidbit. The man who was sent by the government, by the FBI, I think, to collect Nikola Tesla's papers, which have never been found, by the way, was John Trump, Donald Trump's uncle. So it's interesting how these people perpetuate themselves. So anyhow, we're opening up the phone lines. The number to call is 319-527-5016. Again, that's 319-527-5016. So enjoy hearing your call. So please, you know, I love hearing from you guys. And so, you know, there's obviously lots to talk about in the news. In fact, I would have talked to Steve about it if I'd had more time, if we'd covered other subjects. But I'm really watching this Canadian truckers thing. And the more I watch it, the more I think, you know, it's significant, you know, to the entire world. And I think what happens there really will tell a lot about whether we have any chance at all to escape the most nightmarish Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome or whatever, Orwellian future that we can possibly have, because these guys in Canada, these truckers, those Canadian boys up there that are used to the cold weather and knocking each other around on the frozen lakes playing hockey, you know, these are tough guys, and we need to learn something from them, because they're standing, at least right now, they're standing firm. And it's interesting to see you know, a soy boy that Justin Trudeau, who, you know, like our friend Gerald Celani likes to say, was born on third base and thinks he hit a home run. I mean, this is a guy who would be more at home in Studio 54 with his mother, Margaret Trudeau, back in the day, where she was famous for being there with all the celebrities. He would fit in okay there. But as the leader of a nation, it's really hilarious, because he's trying to be tyrannical. He's not good at it. Declaring martial law, it just kind of looks, you know, it doesn't look the part. You know, Trump doing it would look the part, but, you know, he just doesn't look the part. And but it's scary they're doing that, because and we have to see, because the truckers stand firm. This is going to be a potentially watershed moment, because if we can win here, Chris is referencing Bob and Doug McKenzie, Strange Brew. Absolutely. I love Bob and Doug McKenzie. When I was young, my wife, then girlfriend, used to think that I looked a bit like Dave Thomas, who played Doug McKenzie. And one year for a Halloween party, I dressed up like Doug McKenzie, and I thought I looked pretty much like him. Our hair was very similar. But so, you know, love SCTV. Love SCT very much. But and Dave Thomas, before he left Facebook, I kind of got to communicate with him a little bit. But he is a JFK assassination guy. He's a typical liberal in many ways. He was exulting over Justin Trudeau's election back in the day, and then he got off Facebook. But he knew about Mark Lane. He knew about these things. So I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. So it's interesting to know at least one cast member of SCTV back in the day when I was watching it and obsessed with the JFK assassination myself. It was nice to know that at least one of those guys was probably reading a lot of the same books that I was. But anyhow, get back to Canada. So again, if they can continue to do what they're doing, because they're winning, the powers that be are losing the optics here. The optics are no good for them. I mean, when they terrorized that 80-some-year-old guy for honking his horn and the police roughed him up, and I mean, that's not a good look. But then, you know, you go back to Tiananmen Square. That was an awful look. It was disgrace in the eyes of the world. But I think the difference is that the Chinese really don't care. They don't really care what the rest of the world thinks. I think that Canada might care. I think Justin Trudeau might care a little bit. A lot of these guys at their heart want to be. I mean, Trump did too. A lot of these people, they want to be liked. And, you know, people aren't going to like you if you're declaring martial law. They're just not. And, you know, so it'll be interesting to see. Oh, I got a caller already. Okay. Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. This is Jimmy James.
Cool, Jimmy. Nice to hear from you. What's on your mind?
I was just wondering, did you hear all the latest news about the Durham report?
Yes. And that's, you know, I told my friend, our friend Bob Wilson, because he's been telling me every Monday when I'm on rents, mention it when you're on rents. And I did try to fit a reference in there, but this is really old news. It's new because Durham is saying it himself, but and I don't know why he waited so long, but I was writing articles about all this a couple years ago for American Free Press, and they've known about this from the time, you know, Brennan, John Brennan, of all people, who's certainly, you know, friendly with Hillary Clinton, when, you know, they had that CIA report from him where he's talking. He's openly saying in there, yeah, Hillary is, you know, Hillary's, you know, wants to try to tie Trump to the Russians. You know, she's got this, you know, plan. So they know this. This is before the election. And, you know, I think the people that are having their hopes up about it, I don't want to dash your hopes, but I just, you know, the Trump Justice Department didn't do anything about this. Much as we'd all love to see Hillary Clinton in an orange jumpsuit, we'd be a great fantasy. I can't see the Trump, Biden Justice Department doing it. As a matter of fact, you know, I looked, because when Bob Wilson was first talking about it to me, I said, well, let's look and see what the media is, you know, doing. And every report I could find on the, you know, the latest revelations was all from right-wing media, Breitbart, all that. The only thing, the Washington Post had a report, but they headlined it, Trump says Durham. Well, no, it's not Trump saying it. This is Durham saying it himself. So I don't know. Well, what do you think about it?
Well, so far, excuse me. Well, so far, excuse me. I had a little coughing fit there. Well, so far, Durham hasn't actually said anything. He's just done filings, and people are. I mean, you could kind of see where he's going. It looks like, you know, Watergate was all over what? The Republic? Well, people working for the Nixon group breaking in to spy on the Democrats.
Right.
Well, that's child's play. I mean, we got that in spades right here. This yeah. was a sitting president, Obama, Hillary. Oddly enough, the Bidens were just about the only ones who weren't originally in on the plan, because originally Hillary was setting them up, hence the job in the Ukraine and whatnot.
Well, you know, I agree with you that, you know, that certainly that this is, I mean, and there are lots and lots of scandals, including this, that make, I mean, Watergate was nothing. And I think that's why everybody really ought to ask themselves, you know, why Watergate got so much attention when it was really nothing, and why the media appeared to be doing, and you know, that I was a teenager then, and I got all excited during Watergate. I, you know, because again, in my naive mind, I was like, oh, you know, Nixon was a perfect crook. You know, he looked so guilty, and I said, oh, how could they not see it? You know, wake up, you know, wake up, conservatives. And you know, I thought Dan Rather was a great reporter. I didn't even know at that point that he had gotten to start lying about the JFK assassination as a local reporter in Dallas. That's why he was already had been promoted to asking questions at the press conferences. But so many of these things are bigger stories, and this is one of them. Obviously, yeah, sitting president spying on a presidential candidate should be, but the people in charge now, I mean, these are the people, remember, Jimmy, these are the same people that believe there are 57 genders. They believe men can be pregnant. They actually believe that. So when you're trying to reason with people who tell you, no, pregnant persons, that men can be pregnant, I don't know how you can reason with somebody like that. So I don't, and they are so prejudice against Trump. And again, you guys know what I think about Trump. I think he was an actor. I don't like him. But there is such a thing as Trump derangement syndrome, and the entire press has Trump derangement syndrome. And I just can't see them ever, no matter what the evidence is, admitting that anything happened where it would cast Trump in a good light. But I don't know. What do you think is going to happen?
I don't know. I think people are pushing back against this push by the government against the individual's liberty. Something might come of this. I hope something comes of this.
I hope so too, man. I you know, really, really, really. I really do, because you're right. I think, you know, people like us, we're getting more and more pissed off. You know, and the people that are awake are more awake and committed than ever. And that's what you're seeing with the Canadian truckers. And that's why it's so important. If they can win, if they can ever get Trudeau and the Canadian government to back down, then that's the first victory we've had maybe since Lexington and Concord. And, you know, it's a Lexington and Concord moment. I just don't have much confidence that, because you know, the establishment doesn't like to lose; they're not used to losing. And but you know, I've always talked about the real domino theory. And so, if we can get the truth exposed about anything, we can get them to admit the truth about JFK or 9/11, or even some of the smaller things that recently, like the murder of Seth Rich or something, or certainly about if they could admit that this vaccine was dangerous and shouldn't have been trotted out there. If they can admit the hospitals are killing people, like they just killed my brother, if they can admit these with Remdesivir, the medical industrial companies, we can get them to admit the truth on any of these things, the dominoes start to fall. So if somehow they admitted the truth about the Durham report, then it starts to fall, because then it makes, you know, it leads backwards, and then you get the truth about Seth Rich and the 2020 election and all that stuff. But I hope you're right. But
allegedly people are supposedly cutting deals, but who knows if that's true? You know, that's from right wing sources.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the problem, is that you know, it's I've been around long enough to, you know, I've especially with the right, because even though I'm really far left for the most part, but still the far right has been more interesting, way more interesting since like the 90s. And so I read a lot more things on the far right, and I'm more, you know, in tune with them on a lot of things. But they've always kind of had, I think, this naive belief where they think things that, because I just know people. I mean, I go all about, man, and I see, you know, I see how many people are masked, even though they're supposedly easing restrictions here. I see how many more people are masked than not. I see how many people in my own family, how many people buy this bullshit COVID narrative and don't want to hear anything that, you know, that I have to say about it. So we're outnumbered. It's just a question of can we get our strong minority, strong, awake minority who has the facts on their side? Can we get organized enough to do. And that's why I say the truckers are important, because they're I don't think they really care about any of these other issues, but they're committed on this one issue. And this is a huge issue. If we can get them to get the government to back down on mandates, that's a big step. So right now, all my hopium is in Canada.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see that smart Alec Trudeau say, okay, I'll just let's lift mandates. You're right. I mean, would that be so hard?
No, of course not. It's ridiculous. But instead, they're trying to cast the truckers as, you know, the typical nonsense, you know, racist and all that crazy stuff, as if that has anything to do with any of this. But and I think, you know, again, their game is getting is old. And when, you know, I think even the people that are asleep, when they see things like the police stealing gas from trucks and, you know, roughing up an 80 some year old, that's not, the optics aren't on your side there. And they look really bad, you know, and but again, Tiananmen Square, they did what they wanted there. And the Chinese never backed down. But hopefully the Canadians are different from that.
Well, you would hope so, but I don't know anymore. They're getting a lot of heel clicking going on there in Washington and over there in Ottawa, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Good show. Thanks for
Thank you, brother. Thank you, Jimmy. It's always great to hear from you. Thanks for calling. But yes, bye. Take care. But yeah, I think again that this is, and I don't mean to exaggerate perhaps the significance of it, but I think really that that the our Canadian brothers, we ought to be there in lockstep with them. And it'll be interesting to see what happens here. And I don't have any confidence in Americans. You know, American, you know, rednecks or whatever you call them, they're not at the same level with those Canadian boys up there. A lot, I just think they're a lot tougher. Maybe it's a climate or whatever. But I, you know, Biden is already supposedly, and I think the convoys, they shouldn't be tipping their hands, like saying when it's going to start, because it gives the, you know, it gives the deep state time to, you know, plan a response. And they're already apparently going to, you know, going to roll out Homeland Security. So, and again, our country, it's probably more divided than Canada. So, you know, as crazy as people, I mean, I tell you, people here that want the insurrectionists hung. I mean, I hear it all the time. They want them, you know, they want hanged. They want them executed. So would they, you know, they can easily be, you know, brainwashed into thinking that these truckers are the latest round of insurrectionists. And if some of them get shot, well, I don't think the side that's clinging to their mass and believing the narrative, I don't think they're going to protest. So it's, but if the American truckers stay strong, like the Canadians did, then I don't know that they can, because I think that first of all, they're going to meet a lot more opposition, because you've got the American police, the militarized police here, who are not, it's not going to be fun and games. It's not going to be stand down time like it was during the BLM protests. They're going to be right front and center, because they know what this means, because they know what's Canada. The whole world's watching Canada. So if we can get it going in America here too, but you know, I obviously I don't have a high opinion of America or Americans at this point. So let's hope I'm wrong. Let's hope maybe they learn something from Canada, but for right now, at least, let's try to get a small, not a small victory. To get a victory in Canada is a big victory for all of us. So certainly hoping for that. So that's one big story. Obviously, the Durham report is the other one, as Jimmy Jane was talking about. And again, it's just one indication of things that are going. But again, these people have different worlds. You know, people have different realities. And if you talk to people like the average conspiracy person, obviously we're in a, we have a complete, like, you know, in my case, my family, you know, my brother dying, the reality for me is that he was murdered. And I can talk about remdesivir and what the hospitals are doing to other patients. The reality for everybody else in my family and for the majority of people is that he had COVID. It's tragic. And he wasn't vaccinated. End of story. And, you know, so that we have two different realities. And that's why I say the country is so divided, and you can't, there's no independent source anywhere. Like, there's no independent source for anything where that all sides can trust. I mean, almost to the point of telling you, you know, what it's doing outside, what the weather's going to be. People don't trust it. So the people on the right, the establishment right, that, you know, they'll listen to Breitbart, Fox News. People on the left listen to, you know, CNN, NBC, New York Times, Washington Post. That's their reality. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. Sorry. And Chris asked me a question, I think, back. What did you say? I think I missed it. Maybe not. Although Chris is talking about the Pizza Hut buffet. Yeah, it's, you know, but before Pizza Hut, I don't know if any of you remember it out there, Shakey's had the best buffet back in the day. And Shakey's had their own kind of style of pizza, but it was built where you could eat a whole lot of it. So it was perfect for the buffet. You know, typically, even when I was a big eater, 4 pieces of pizza would be pretty much my limit. But I went to a buffet, and I remember one time I was a teenager, and my system was primed, and I could burn calories really fast, and my metabolism was at its peak. My friend and I, and this friend recently died a couple years ago, one of the many friends I've lost, but we had a eating contest, a pizza, you know, at the buffet contest. We had a contest, and I won with 21 pieces of pizza and 8 pieces of fried chicken. So it's something to be proud of, I guess. And yeah, we have another caller on the line. Caller, you're on the line. Caller?
Yeah, Don?
Yes.
This is Tom Phoney, one of your Facebook friends.
Oh, hi, Tom. Of course, I recognize your name. How you doing? Thanks for calling.
Oh, fine. I wanted to take you down the rabbit hole of the JFK assassination.
I'm sure.
You're an expert from your days of working with Mark Lane.
Sure.
Vince Palamara, a few weeks ago, he had a video on his Facebook page.
Yeah.
And it was about the movie JFK. And it was titled, I think, JFK, the movie as history, something similar to that. But, it was an excellent video. It had a panel discussion. The movie had just come out. I think this panel discussion was at American University, January of 1992, I think, was the date of it. And the panelists were Dan Maldia. What the heck's the guy's name that... I can't think of the guy. John Judge.
Oh, yeah, John Judge. Sure.
And the Congressman Gonzalez. They were on one side, and then the moderator, this guy from American University, was in the center, and then they had some film critic, some gal. If I told you her name, you wouldn't recognize her, I don't think. And then they had a guy from the Washington Post who was the deputy editor, something like that. And
right,
then
right.
Mm-hmm. On the end was Fletcher Prouty.
Uh-huh, sure.
And it was just amazing what Fletcher Prouty was saying. Anyway, after I watched that, I did some research. I remember Fletcher Prouty identifying the guy who walked past the tramps.
Mm-hmm.
He identified him as Ed Lansdale.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I got to thinking, I wonder if there's some connection between Ed Lansdale and any of these hobos. I think we can all agree one was Charles Harrelson, and I don't know if you agree, but I think the old man tramp was this Chauncey Holt.
Mm-hmm. Now, some people think E. Howard Hunt is it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm familiar with all the theories, and I kind of think the critics back in the 70s with Robert Groden and Dick Gregory made a little bit of a mistake by stressing the tramps. Interesting, But I don't think they were ever the best evidence. And I guess they thought it was sensational. But I thought, even at the time, I thought they spent a little too much time with it. But yeah, Vince Palarama is one of my favorites. He and I probably don't agree too much on politics in general. But man, well, he's one of the best researchers like out there. he's a great researcher.
He focuses on the Pittsburgh Steelers a little bit
too. Yeah, yes, exactly. He's a little too Steelers obsessed.
Let him go, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, I did some research on this Chauncey Holt. I noticed when I was part of the group, and I think you were too, of the Assassination Forum with Rich Del Rosa.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Karen Harcourt, she claimed to be Chauncey's daughter. And, you know, I was asking her about how did these tramps, you know, get away without being fingerprinted and all this. And she gave me the story, you know, they had told them that there would be an incident there where they would lay the blame on the pro-Castro Cubans. Well, there was an incident, all right. But, you know, she gave me quite a bit of information, but it's basically, you know, my dad didn't know about this stuff. But I did a little research, and I got a video of Chauncey Holt. It's called Spooks, Hoods, and JFK, The Shocking Truth. There's quite a bit of information in that, but I still didn't get the answer I was looking for until I accidentally came across an article written on some website called Crime or something. And here's what it said in the one sentence that kind of was what I was looking for. It talked about Operation Mongoose. And it says, Holt claimed that he worked on the project with figures such as Sam Giancana, Johnny Roselli, Edward Lansdale, and William Harvey. So that tells me that, you know, this Ed Lansdale, when he was walking by the tramps, you know, if he knew this Chauncey Holt, he would have, you know, stopped. Of course, they were being escorted by the police, but to me, it just told me that was all staged because those two guys knew each other well.
Yeah.
Chauncey Holt.
Well, I think, you know, when you look at, when you try to identify people like Lansdowne, certainly even more esoterically, the George Bush, people would say young George H.W. Bush is there. I just, you know, I think that, and of course it goes into, you know, deeper things like Prayer Man or something like that, where, you know, we just can't, or in the past, Badge Man and, you know, who was on the Knoll. I just think it's hard really to analyze those photographs. They're unclear. People see what they want to see, and most of them are not clear enough. But I just prefer, you know, to concentrate. I mean, I get in those discussions, but I think I like to stick with the evidence. The ballistics show Oswald couldn't have, show they lied. The autopsy, the medical evidence shows they lied. Right. And I go from there. I mean, and let's go from there. And those things are interesting, but I think people probably spend a little too much time on that. And that's the tramps have always been popular. And they got my attention when I was a teenager for a while. But then I started finding, I said, you know, that's not as interesting as this other stuff. And I always, at that time, I just was more interested in the other things.
Well, what did Mark Lane ever say about the CIA participation? I'm sure he had a conversation or two with you about that, didn't he?
Well, I think he, you know, he was pretty much like Jim Garrison. And again, I don't, you know, I loved him. I loved Garrison, and Mark Lane was my hero. But I don't think you can accuse. I mean, certainly it certainly looks like the CIA could have been guilty, and they certainly were involved. I mean, big CIA officials like Alan Dulles, probably Helms, and people like that. But I just, you know, I think you show that the official story is wrong. That's the way everything I write, I do it that way. You show that the official story is wrong, and then we can speculate, you know, from there. But I mean, certainly it looks like Did the conspiracy originate in the CIA? That's why I love the way Oliver Stone did it. I think it was probably something, but again, I don't know. I think it was something in the wind, as he said, you know, where the people like LeMay and people in the Pentagon that were interested got together with people like Dulles and other people in the hierarchy, the CIA, certainly Hoover and the FBI, probably other upper echelon officials. We know a lot of the Secret Service people didn't like JFK. So I think they could all get together like that. I think Israel, I wouldn't discount that. You know, Israel, the final judgment thing. We know that he was, JFK was in a big feud with David Ben-Gurion about them developing a nuclear program. So I think there's a lot of forces that had, the same mutual interest in getting rid of him. But I don't know. I just know Oswald didn't do it. That's what people ask me. They say, well, I know who didn't do it. Lee Harvey Oswald.
I want to thank you. You've had so many guests. Now I'm looking at all the books that you actually directed me to by the guests you had. Let me just give you five of them. One is Who Murdered Elvis by Stephen Ubaney. Let's see, you just had him on, but hey, I think that's the first hour of the show.
Yes.
Moon Man by Bart Sybrol.
Yes.
The Deputy Interviews, Steve Cameron.
Mm-hmm.
Steering Truth by Vol Wesley Frazier.
Right.
And one I just got a couple of weeks ago, Las Vegas Dunes Hotel Casino.
Right.
Minari's, I think it's the last name.
Right, right, exactly.
All
yeah,
very
yeah.
good books.
And, great.
You ought to collect a fee for for all these books you're selling.
Well, I wish I could. Well,
and I'm going to be buying some of yours pretty soon too.
Oh well, please do. And Vince Palarema, you know, his Survivors Guild is still essential, and you know, he was on my show. Was maybe two months ago. I want to say so you caught that right.
A very good show.
Yeah. Well, that's why I appreciate it. I'm glad you. And yeah, please start with my books. You know, but I'm writing Hidden History 3 now, and I have a lot of new stuff. Well, not you know, relatively new stuff that I, you know, with JFK and 9/11, and I'm going into the mass casualty events. I'm not going to shy away from Sandy Hook and all the other stuff. So I'm going to have a lot of new information. Plus, we'll go back to the founding of the Republic, and I, thanks to my friend Vince Agnelli, I found a new mystery involving George Mason and the disappearance of his wife, second wife. So there's these kind of cool things throughout history. So Steve Ubaney was talking about FDR. I have a much lower opinion of FDR than he does. So I've got, thanks to Peter Zekosh, who I think is still in the chat room. He and certainly Chris Graves is always sending me stuff. Bob
he
Wilson.
A lot on your Facebook page too.
He's
good posters that put.
Oh,
very
he's,
good information up there.
Yeah, between Chris Graves, Peter Zekosh, and Bob Wilson, those three have sent me so much information that I, you know, it really helps that. Carolyn Goida, yeah, Carolyn Goida, yes, she's. I hope she shows back. Yeah, she's got a great story to tell too. She's got to tighten it up a little bit, and I need a little more documentation. But her story is astounding. What happened to her? So, but I still have to have it verified a little bit. But yeah. Yeah, I have some great supporters out there, and I really appreciate them all, including you.
Okay, Don. Well, I'll let you go, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks very much for calling.
Okay. See you.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, great to hear from that. Tom Foney's a great guy, and he goes back to the Rich Della Rosa Forum days. I don't know how many of you remember that, but that was the first and the greatest of all the JFK assassination forums, and when I first discovered the internet, when I first got on the internet, and that was the Wild West days of the internet, maybe 97, 98, something like that, when I first got on there regularly. A couple things I discovered. One of the first websites I discovered was Rents.com, which is ironic in that, you know, I'm on Jeff Rents' show now every Monday. He gives me a nice audience there. But I just thought it was great. It was like a clearinghouse for conspiracy news, so I loved it. But the Rich Della Rosa's JFK forum was incredible, and Jack White was there. I love Jack White, and Gary Mack was there, and he'd already turned, and he was Jack White's former best friend. They used to have arguments on there. It was incredible. Yes, message boards back then, exactly. Chuck, and, you know, Rich unfortunately died a while back. But I mean, you had people like Greg Burnham that was on there, who was known as Monk then. And he and I were in lockstep. I'm not sure what happened to him, but he, I don't know. I don't think we see too much eye to eye now, but I'm not going to get to talk too much about the JFK assassination people. But Chris says, Rich turned me on to the idea of an alternative to Bruder. Well, yeah, there's, well, Peter's still there. Cool. That's great to see you, Pete. Yeah, Rich is the one who popularized the idea, and Greg Burnham was one of the ones who saw it. You know, just the people that said they saw the other film, again, I don't know. Is it possible? Sure. But, I mean, I know Pamela Brown, who's, you know, done some good work on The Limousine. I believe she said she saw the film in a theater. And, you know, I think in New York, if I would remember it right. I apologize for that. But something like that. I there's just no record of that. The Zapruder film was suppressed right away, you know, real or, you know, altered. And certainly I think the Zapruder films were altered. And I was always on the side of Jack White and Fetzer, although not to the degree Fetzer certainly was. But I certainly believe that the Zapruder film was doctored in some way. And there may have been another film. I'm just not sure. Greg Burnham and Pamela Brown, and I don't know who else. I guess Rich claimed he saw it. I love Rich. He ran a great form, but I just don't, I don't know. Certainly we know that, you know, that certain frames were missing from the film, that, you know, the game and, you know, the sprocket holes and all that. So we know that, but, beyond that, I don't know that there was a pickle film. And of course, you know, the anti-alterationists always did have one strong argument. That was that the Zapruder film, as it stands in its very dubious state and probably altered state, it's there. You know, that would be, to me, it was one of the strongest pieces of evidence for a conspiracy, because once you see that, you see JFK's head's flying backwards at, you know, incredible speed, defying the law of physics, and you're told Oswald's behind. I mean, you don't need to see too much more. So, you know, what they altered and why, I don't know, but they certainly didn't alter the conspiracy out of the Zapruder film, because it's there for all to see. Chuck talks about the bootlegs. Yep, I had a bootleg. Actually, Penn Jones was giving them out at one point with the TCI subscription, the Continuing Inquiry subscriptions. Chris found my original website board from 1990, which was called I Protest, by the way. And I was, right? I was at this since before JFK Jr. was alive. And I, you know, Chris finds everything. How he found that, I don't know. Because I called it I Protest, much as I call my Friday show. And if you heard the story about that, the reason I used to tell it on I Protest, the reason I named my show I Protest is from my second favorite movie of all time, which would be first if Frank Capra had found a way to end it, and he had filmed eight different endings, and there was just no way to end it. But if you've ever seen the 1941 movie Meet John Doe, Gary Cooper and my favorite actress, Barbara Stanwyck, and Gary Cooper's great too, but James Gleason, one of the great character actors, Edward Arnold, great, just, you know, typical Capra cast. Hollywood, you know, movie-making, filmmaking at its finest. Just an incredible populist message. And the column that, you know, Gary Cooper is a ball player, a baseball player with a bum arm that he needs to get operated on. He can't afford the money. So he answers an ad that he answers because Barbara Stanwyck writes a column called I Protest by John Doe, and says that he's going to jump off the highest building in town on Christmas Eve if people don't start being nice to each other. So it's just a fantastic premise. Unfortunately, there was just no perfect way to end it. And that's what makes it number two in my book behind It's a Wonderful Life, another Capra film. But at any rate, that's why I go with I Protest, because that was the name of John Doe's column. And I'm always protesting something. Rich De La Rosa and the French investigator William Raymond, who told on camera Jim Mars about seeing the others. Yes, William Raymond definitely was one of those guys. Pete says he's going to send me another bundle of research. I had to take a break. Well, you know what? You and Chris, especially, the barrage you send me every day on Facebook, I mean, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it, but you can definitely slow down on it. And Peter, you don't have to worry. I mean, I've written some stuff about FDR. I've, you know, I'm just trying to trying to get my section up on the Epstein I want to write about, and I want to write about John McAfee, who I interviewed twice. And still, boy, I would love to hear, you know, because I, you know, his wife liked me, and she's the one that contacted me the second time and said, hey, she asked me to have John McAfee back on the show, and because he liked my show. And I said, you're one of the shows that he likes. And I said, oh, really cool. So, but she hasn't answered me since he died. I'm trying to find out if, because, you know, the big question there, the million-dollar question there, is if he really did own a unit in that condominium in Florida that collapsed very mysteriously and, you know, Building 7 type pancake fashion. Very strange. Have not been able to figure it out because there was a tweet that came out supposedly from him about with the address on it. Have not been able to verify it, and she hasn't answered me, so I don't know. Hopefully, Chuck's asked you, Don, do you have any thoughts on the settlement with the prince? Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. I guess it's an indication of guilt, but it's interesting, you know, because they certainly smeared her and all the other women who've come forward. But you know, of course, that's the problem is when they make an out of court settlement on anything, the powerful person or the rich person can always say, well, you know, I just did that to avoid the publicity. I don't want to drag my family to them. So they always have a rationale for it. But yeah, I thought it was interesting. Well, I hope she got paid well because. You know, all these victims certainly should have gotten something. Although I will say, in defense of Epstein, I don't mean to defend him, but obviously. But I really hate the way people misuse terms. Epstein, as far as we know, is not a pedophile. A pedophile is not somebody that's attracted to teenage girls. It has a different term for it, but it used to be pretty normal behavior for any adult male. You pedophile is somebody who likes prepubescent girls or boys, you know, haven't developed yet. It's a whole different thing. And I haven't heard anything that he had really little kids going to Lolita Island. So I hate the way people, because they'll say, you know, 17, you know, when Miley Cyrus was 17 and walking around in her bikini, people were saying, oh, man, you're a pedophile. Come on. It's ridiculous. I mean, go back and rock and roll in history and how many songs were about Sweet 16, Happy Birthday, Sweet 16, 16 Candles, You're 16, You're Beautiful in Your Mind. I mean, just on that. And, you know, tons of rock stars that got caught with teenage girls, nothing happened to them. So I don't like to have the terminology mixed up, and I think there's a huge difference there. That doesn't mean they certainly were victims, but I think in a little bit of a different way. But so I hope she got paid. Certainly anybody that can, you know, because the Prince Andrew's, you know, he's been involved in lots of bizarre stuff since going back to the days of Koo Stark, the soft porn star back. He's always kind of been the black sheep of the royal family. Chris said he said, yes, you did send me McAfee. Yes, you send me some more McAfee stuff. And I hope I can find him I apologize that, and you said you sent me stuff about James Brown. Some of that stuff gets lost in the shuffle. I can't scroll back far enough to find it all. So I really appreciate it, Chris, very much. You're working way too hard for me. Maxwell had a JFK Jr. Carol Radswell connection. Yeah, well, Carol Radswell is another one that I'm trying to get a hold of, but. And Chris is great for finding me these phone numbers, and I found some on my own. Bob Wilson has found me some. But what I found is interesting, people, I appreciate everything you do, Chris. You know, you're working way too hard, but I really can't tell you how much I appreciate it. That, you know, one thing I found of these phone numbers that people find or I find, I'd say 90%+, maybe 99% of the numbers when you call them, the number you have called is no longer in service. Now, these are people that are all associated, sometimes in a pretty obscure way, that most people wouldn't be, you know, they're not digging as deep as me, not going so far down the rabbit hole, would not even know about. But it's amazing. That's why it was a shock when I actually got a hold of Timothy McVeigh's father. He actually answered the phone. But, you know, of course, he wouldn't talk to me. But not many like that. Most of them, the phone number is no longer in service, so it does make, and of course it makes you wonder because, you know, why would they possibly you know, that many, a higher percentage of people that just happen to be involved in these incidents in some way, they would happen to have their phones disconnected. Chris asked, is Seymour Hersh still not want to talk? I don't know. I haven't called him back. I mean, he kind of made it clear that he was interested, but he said, I better not talk. And he basically was saying, it'll be in the next book. But I didn't even get a chance really to ask him about what I was interested in. Obviously, was those videotapes he claimed he saw of the little boys being raped by our USA, USA support the troops soldiers in front of their screaming mothers. I mean, you talk about a deal breaker. That's one. If you have a real honest media, they get a hold of a tape like that, that's instant wake up time. That's the majority of the people that are walking around dead, you know, comatose, asleep at the wheel. They see little boys being raped by our troops, maybe with the American flag behind them, while their mothers are screaming. That's, you can't I don't think you can possibly get away from that and justify that, especially the women. That would get to them. So, you know, not that I want to watch that tape, but that would be really something. It would be earth shattering if we could show that, because that could bring down the whole thing right away. Yeah, I was shocked that McVeigh's dad picked up too, Chris. And Todd Bergen was another one. Yeah, that emailed me back, and of course I have all the details in Industry 3, but he wasn't very pleasant. Let's put it that way. But he also didn't answer my question about why he gave an interview about a phone call that didn't exist. For those of you who don't know, Todd Bergen was a Coast Guard petty officer who was sent by the Coast Guard to give an interview with Susan Warnick of WCVB-TV in Massachusetts. And I have that interview thanks to researcher Scott Myers, another guy. I'd like to see what's happening with him. He was on that. He was one of the regulars on the Rich De La Rosa Forum. I'm sure Tom Phoney remembers him. Scott did some early work with the JFK Jr. assassination. In fact, he was on a TV show once talking about it. I can't remember what the name it was. It was, he did some good work, and he sent me original VHS videotape coverage that taped live. And thank goodness he taped it live, because they edited it out later, of live coverage in WCVB-TV, and that included the Todd Bergen interview. So they can't claim it didn't happen. And, he's talking about nothing but the 9:39 p.m. phone call from JFK Jr. For those of you who don't know, that's really significant, because they claim that 9:39 p.m. is the exact moment when JFK's plane went into a death spiral. So obviously, I couldn't have been calmly waiting landing instructions and talking like it's another day in the park there. So, yes, Encounters with the Unexplained. Chris knows every... I used to have that episode on tape. It's probably on one of my VHS tapes somewhere. I have hundreds and hundreds of those tapes, and God knows where it's at. But I did have that. And hosted by the actor that I think he died a while. I can't remember the guy's name. He used to play a mobster sometimes. I can't remember his name. But I'm sure Chris knows. But anyway, so that's it. So when, but you'll have to, you know, I'll be like Steve Eubany now. You'll have to read Hidden History 3 to see exactly what he said to me. But he was, he didn't even address the fact of why he did your interview. And Susan Warnick, why he did an interview. Susan Warnick, I emailed three times, and she never replied to me. She's the one that did the interview. She should certainly care. But, you know, this is what happens. In Sandy Hook, you have Andrea McCarron, who I emailed about the interview with Nurse Sally Cox at who was a nurse at Sandy Hook Elementary School, who breathlessly told told Andrea McCarron about the wonderful kindergarten teacher, who was Adam Lanza's mother at the school. What a beloved teacher she was, had been there for years. Well, of course, subsequently learned, according to the same people that dished that out early, that Nancy Lanza had no connection to the school at all, never been a teacher there. So what is a nurse doing saying that? So I asked her that, and she said, I wondered about that too. But then she basically said, but this is the way things work. People get confused. The families have been through enough. There was no conspiracy. And as I say in Hidden History 3, there was no conspiracy. Basically ought to be chiseled in stone outside every newspaper building, every mainstream newspaper building in America. Because that's exactly what that was. Okay, Citizen GX says, what about the Alaskan jet that crashed? Which one was it? Which one was that? Yeah, Jerry Orbach. That's it, Chris. Thank you. Yes, exactly. That's it. I knew you'd find that. Yes, Myers did name the wedding guest at Rory's. Okay, I didn't know that. I'll have to check and see because I couldn't find the wedding guest name that Shepard Smith, I know, Fox News Shepard Smith mentioned several times, but I could not find it listed anywhere. So that's interesting. Hopefully I can find it if I ever have time to go through all my VHS tapes, which are tons and tons. I mean, you know, back in the day, I used to tape every Andy Griffith episode, Leave It to Beaver, Beverly Hillbillies, Green Acres, tons of JFK stuff. It wasn't very much conspiracy stuff because the networks would never show that. But I taped all I could and lots of movies and things like that. So it's hard to find anything in that mess. But I'm not sure, Citizen GX, what about the Alaska, which Alaskan jet you're talking about? I'm not sure. But, okay, we're down to 3 minutes, so can't even find a pilot. Well, I'm sure, yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're trying to, because again, they're trying to, they don't want people talking about this stuff. So we're going to keep it alive as long as they let us hear. And you're going to, I appreciate everybody listening to shows like this, and you need to do that. You need to listen to shows like mine because we're the last defense. They've already deplatformed people on YouTube and all of their social media. They fact checkers on Facebook. I mean, that used to be my biggest platform. But, you know, now when I post about my brother, I got hundreds and hundreds of responses. They didn't, you know, censor that. But personal stuff, I guess they don't. But anything that touches on the truth about any of these subjects, they shadow ban me. And a shadow ban is basically they hold your post up so that people don't see it for a while. So they don't ban me completely, but they do. And that's, you know, they've banned lots of great people. You know, the people that have my biggest platforms for many years in YouTube, hundreds of thousands of subscribers, they got rid of them all, clean sweep. So, you know, the next line is going to be radio shows like this, podcasts, and blogs. They're coming. And if you don't stand up against it, and we didn't, we didn't stand up when they deplatformed Alex Jones or Alex Jones and stuff, you know, but no, you have to stand up against that. That's why I defended Whoopi Goldberg. I don't like anything about Whoopi Goldberg, but she shouldn't have been censored. Everybody has free speech. Yes, Warren, and on 9793, this is Chris, I guess. Yeah, Hale Boggs was indeed driven to the airport by a young Bill Clinton. These people are trained for a long time. So I know we're running out of time. So anyway, again, so please keep supporting. Anything you can do to support is great. Read my Substack articles. If you haven't read about my brother in detail, DonaldJeffries.media, how my brother lost to the medical industrial complex, DonaldJeffries.media. You can go there, DonaldJeffries.news, my blog. Listen to iProtest. I live stream every Friday, 5 to 7 now. I'll be doing it on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And it's live on Rockfin. Again, so thanks so much for listening. And we may not be here in the next few weeks. I'll let you know. But thanks, Chuck O'Celli. Thanks for everyone else for listening.